Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about the 2024 Oscar nominations. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for us and you and everyone listening and watching. Again, we are trying our YouTube experiment. I keep saying that at the beginning of each podcast because I know not everyone listens to every podcast, so just want to get the word out there that for a few weeks at least, we're going to be recording and taping our podcast, popping them online for your viewing enjoyment or not. But please watch, because we hope that more people will be able to discover our podcast that way. So today is a little bit of a difference from our most recent shows. It's been a few weeks now since the Academy Award nominations were announced. In fact, it's been probably a couple of months now. We're heading into March. We are in March. Goodness me, it's March the third time we're recording this. And the Oscar ceremony itself will be March 10th. So, we thought we would have our kind of annual fireside chat.
Whilst eating pistachios.
While Rashmi crunches through pistachios.
Pistachios are delicious.
Oh, they're my favorite.
They're like addictive.
Yeah.
They're so good.
So, and the reason I'm not touching them is because that is literally all you would hear for the next 45 minutes is me crunching, crunching, crunching. I can't stop pistachios.
You can't stop.
While they exist, I will eat them. I buy the big Costco bags.
Yeah.
And it takes me about a day and a half.
And if you're watching,
them.
You can see our array of snacks, which we didn't mention.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it. So this is another back-to-back recording. We don't always wear the same clothes week to week. sometimes I do. We did a back-to-back recording at Yazdi's house again. That's our temporary studio. Our semi-permanent studio, actually. We're recording here a lot these days.
Yeah.
Yazdi, build a studio.
So
we have these wonderful cakes that I've been chomping through, and these lovely orange and cranberry scones from
Trader Joe's.
From Trader Joe's. Oh, so good.
They are the best, yes.
All right. I think we are going to have our work cut out for us to get through this discussion.
Okay.
So I vote that we get cracking.
Yep. So what we thought we'd do is...
Release the Kraken!
Yes.
Crack-a-lacking.
What we thought we'd do is... I will read out the category, and we're going to start with the five main ones, I think five or six main ones, and then if we have time, we'll go through some others. But we're literally going to go through and talk about what we think of the nominees and just other stuff around that category, right?
Rashmi is chairing the discussion.
And also, for what it's worth, we will make our recommendations for who we think will win, if that helps you with your Oscar pool.
Yep, exactly, yes. Okay, let's get going. So we will start with actor in a supporting role, and the nominees are Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. What do you guys think of the nominee group? Who do you think will win? Who do you think is missing?
I think this is a pretty good group. I mean, I can stand behind at some level all of them, but I think if there's ever a category which is locked down, it's this one. This one is Robert Downey Jr.'s to lose for Oppenheimer. There's a groundswell that he's been around for decades, and he's done amazing work in this movie, and his time has come.
Joe.
Yeah, it's an easy one, unlike many of the other categories. Look, I've seen better work from everyone else on this list. Danny Jr. to me was kind of a shoo-in. We called it when we saw Oppenheimer. He was the biggest surprise to me, to be honest, in the Oppenheimer movie. Agree. What do you think, Rashmi?
Yeah, I agree. I think Downey Jr. is the most transformative performance. Transformational, I guess you would say. It's the one where he's playing against type that we've normally seen him in. And it's a great performance. I am shocked that Sterling K. Brown is here. for American Fiction. Although it was a good performance, I think it was highly overplayed. I am sad that Jamie Bell or Paul Mescal from All of Us Strangers is not here.
And you're not shocked that Ken is here for...
I am shocked that Ryan Gosling is here. So I think two of those are wasted.
Yeah, that's a bigger crime than Sterling K. Brown's appearance, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. But I agree with you. It's lockdown. Go ahead.
I mean, I think Sterling K. Brown, I think I've had this discussion with a few people. His character cannot be how it presents. It's a satire, right? The way it's played, it has to be.
Yeah.
Because the way Sterling K. Brown plays it, it's so over the top that it's kind of hard to.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's been in, you know, in movies and television for a long, long time. So if this allows him to say he's Oscar nominated, I won't begrudge it.
Although, but that's a terrible reason.
That's a terrible reason.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's not worthy. It's just this performance doesn't merit it relative to other ones that we've seen this year.
I do think Mark Ruffalo did very, very good work in Poor Things. It's a funny take. We haven't seen him be funny. And I think the one other one that, to our own detriment, we fail to recognize is Robert De Niro. I think his role was not as routine as people think it is. I think he had a very tricky role to play, which he pulled off effortlessly. But it's Robert De Niro. Everybody expects that. So,
Frankly, it was a not non-memorable role. I mean, yes, I agree with what you're saying technically. I just didn't feel it, if you know what I mean, when I see De Niro. But, you know, I don't begrudge him being here. I just think done better work.
And, you know, I think it's, we'll get into that. I think it's an absolute travesty that one of the finest films of the year, which is incidentally streaming on Hulu, All of Us Strangers, did not get a single Oscar nomination. Yeah. But like you said, Paul Mescal and Jamie Bell in that film would have been very deserving. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on then. So we'll do actress in a supporting role then. The nominees are Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Yazdi, kick us off.
I think this is actually a pretty weak category.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I'm, we'll talk about Oppenheimer, but I don't know why Emily Blunt is here. I mean, I think she's riding the coattails. And, you know, again, I think Emily Blunt has had like 4 Oscar nominations, never won anything. And, considering her considerable contributions to cinema, it's a shame. But not this film and this role. Daniel Brooks, America Ferrera, Jodie Foster, they're all bit parts. I don't think they particularly, I don't want to make Barbie people angry, but I don't think they particularly, you know, lend too much to the movie. So I think the one who had the most gut punch in the movie that they were supporting was Divine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers. And she has won every single award leading up to this. So again, I would put all my money on her winning deservedly for Best Supporting Actress.
Completely agree. Divine Joy Randolph was almost instantly noticed by the three of us when we watched The Holdovers. And granted, it was the time of year when we were thinking about awards, but it was a very effective portrayal of that character. She had sparse lines, but she delivered them with perfection. We knew exactly what that was. Yeah, the rest of them... I have to admit, I haven't seen The Color Purple this year, so that's the only one missing on my list. But, you know, America Ferrera had the big soapbox speech in the movie. You know, yes, memorable. But Best Actress, I think there's perhaps other ones that we might consider here. As much as I enjoyed Jodie Foster in Naiad, the movie in and of itself didn't strike me as, you know, Oscar fodder, even though it was played for that in many ways, but it wasn't the kind of thing that we saw last year with who was the late nomination, the American for female actress, the one that there were all the controversy.
I know who, I see her face in front of my eyes.
We'll look her up. That was
she was in that drug addiction film, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We will come back to that. But point being, that was a terrific performance in an okay movie. This didn't have that feeling. Naiad. It didn't feel like a stellar performance in a in a not so well known movie.
Andrea Riseborough.
That's
Thank
it.
Thank you. Rashmi.
Yeah. No, I think this is, I agree with everything you guys said. I could get behind Emily Blunt. I thought that even though she wasn't, it wasn't the best performance she's ever done, it was, given she's only one of two women in the movie, mm-hmm. It's a good performance that stands up well to Cillian Murphy. Like Joe, The Color Purple is the only one I haven't seen. I don't think America Ferrera deserves to be here, but sure, I can get behind it for that one scene in the movie. I mean, I think, you know, famously Viola Davis picked up a nomination for, was it 7 minutes, as did Dame Judi Dench.
Dame Judi Dench did for
7 minutes in Shakespeare in Love. So, okay, fair enough. Jodie Foster was probably the best thing about the movie Naiad. I didn't particularly love that movie. It was okay. It didn't bring anything new to the biopic genre. Divine Joy, I think this is another one that's wrapped up. She's been winning every single award. Notable missings?
Yes, I would have loved, and I was really praying it didn't come to be, I would have loved if Rachel McAdams got nominated for Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. She played the mom.
I think she was
so wonderful in that. And then the other one is a guilty pleasure. I was hoping maybe Rosamund Pike in Saltburn would pick it up. And she has so few lines, but she just nailed the life out of all of those lines. So those would have been worthy, I think.
Yes.
And we already talked about Claire Foy.
Yes, I would have loved to have seen Sandra Hüller for The Zone of Interest here.
Yes, yes.
And I think, that's probably it. I'm just looking at my list. Yeah. Joe, any others for you?
No. Shall I read the next category
so that
you
why
get
don't
a chance
you?
To check what's the next one in your list?
It would be actor in a leading role.
Okay, so the nominees for actor in a leading role.
Oh, I wanted to say that.
We have Bradley Cooper for Maestro. We have Colman Domingo for Rustin. We have Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction.
I think this is a really admirable list. I think from the past shows, Cillian Murphy has this one locked up, and I'm glad to see that. He is an impeccable actor, and I think his time has come. But I think Bradley Cooper was excellent as
Bernard Lenz. Leonard Bernstein.
Leonard Bernstein. Thank you. I'm in a nut haze at the moment.
Yeah, you've had a too many pistachios.
Colman Domingo was excellent as Rustin. I'm really happy to see him here. I think Rustin was a good movie. It wasn't a brilliant movie. It's famously produced by the Obamas. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. Jeffrey Wright was also in that movie. Paul Giamatti is the one I can't quite get behind on this list. I know that's one of your favorite movies, Yazdi, but it's Paul Giamatti being Paul Giamatti. I am really, really, really sad that Andrew Scott didn't make it for All of Us Strangers.
Yeah.
I think that was a much more nuanced, intimate performance than what Paul Giamatti gave us here in The Holdovers. But it's a great list. And I think Cillian Murphy has this wrapped up. I think I said that. Joe?
Everything you've said here, really. Like you, Paul Giamatti doing the Giamatti thing is why he gets hired. I feel like I've seen him do better work. I mean, he's good here. He's very good. But I feel like... This is cliche Giamatti, right? The almost about
if Giamatti wins, I'll be the one clapping. You guys will be booing.
We will be booing. Yeah.
Maestro, really good performance, but I failed to connect with that movie in so many ways. So, yeah, everything you've really said there, Rashmi. Cillian Murphy would be my pick on this list, and I also think he's the one that's likely to walk away with a statue.
Yeah.
I think pound for pound, the most difficult, most heart-rending performance by a male lead actor this year was Andrew Scott in All of Us Strangers.
Yes.
So I think, again, it's a shame that he's not in this category. you know, the only other person I can think of was T.O. Yu in Past Lives.
Yes.
Either as supporting or as lead. I think he was so good.
Thank you.
He was so good in that film. I'm okay with this list. I'm just so happy that Colman Domingo will not get, you know, to the twilight years of his film career and think that he never got an Oscar nomination. He's been so good in so many films that it's great that, you know, he gets, even though it's highly unlikely he's going to win it, but I'm glad he's recognized. Likewise, Jeffrey Wright has been in every movie. I don't know, he's been in like 200 movies by now, I think.
And TV.
And TV. So I'm glad he finally got a chance to play the lead for once in a movie and that he's recognized for it. I actually think this is a race between Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer and Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. Yeah. There's been a groundswell of support for Holdovers. Giamatti famously did not get nominated for Sideways, you know, his breakthrough role. He's gotten a couple of supporting actor nominations. So I think they're both like very accomplished actors whose time has come. Certainly, it seems like Cillian Murphy has been picking up more awards leading up to here.
Yeah.
But again, I'm hoping that Giamatti maybe pulls an upset. But it's between those two. And I'd be happy with either one. They both do wonderful work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, do you want to do the next category?
Which would be actress in a leading role.
I would also have liked, you know, as a guilty pleasure, Barry Keoghan for Saltburn. I thought he was pretty good.
I would say it's the most talked about performance of the year.
It's a very brave performance.
I mean the whole movie is his arc, pretty much. Yeah. Anyway, yes. Go on, sorry.
No. It's definitely a very brave performance. And memorable, but best. Yeah. Again, I feel like I've seen him do better work too.
Yeah.
All right. Actress then in a leading role. We have Annette Bening for Naiad. We have Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. We have Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. We have Carey Mulligan for Maestro and Emma Stone for Poor Things.
Yes, Dee.
I think this is the most competitive category. And I think it's the only one which is probably not locked down yet. Because Emma Stone and
Lily Gladstone
have been alternating, right? So Lily Gladstone won a whole bunch of awards leading up to year, but then Emma Stone of late has been picking up the BAFTAs and so forth.
And the SAGs, right?
SAGs. And it's... So Sandra Hüller is marvelous in Anatomy of a Fall. I mean, that movie is nothing if not for her performance. Carey Mulligan in Maestro, I have a conflicted feelings about Maestro, but Carey Mulligan was, you know, in that movie, everybody was playing larger than life, certainly the lead character. Carey Mulligan seemed to be the only one who had calibrated herself perfectly. She never felt like she was overly acting. She felt lived in, to me. So I think it's down to Lily Gladstone or Emma Stone. And it's funny because Lily Gladstone's performance is so internal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the entire movie. She's the heart of the movie, but it's so internal. Whereas Emma Stone's performance is so external in the movie. She's like literally external. She's naked emotionally, physically in every way. So it's a good comparison. I would have loved for, we just talked about this before we started, Tiana Taylor in 1001.
Yes, thank you.
You know, you see, she's a singer. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Tiana Taylor is a singer, and through the course of that movie, she plays like, 20, 30 years? She ages? I thought that she was a middle-aged actor. And she's like so young, and, you know, she brings so much... matured, lived in, aching, desperate, distraught to that role, that it's just, I'm just amazed. So that's an oversight. And I also loved Phoebe Divenor in Fair Play on Netflix.
Yes, yes.
She was very good, I thought. And also Julia Louis-Dreyfus in You Hurt My Feelings, but I know I'm in the minority there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's between those two people.
Okay, so what is Annette Bening doing in this category? I mean... Really? She shouldn't be here. That's wasted. And where is Greta Lee?
Oh, Greta Lee!
Greta Lee for Past
female.
Lives
yes.
is missing here.
Yes.
You know, you guys know how I feel about Lily Gladstone. I think it's like
It's an Oscar bait performance.
Yes, yes. And I think it's, you know, I don't want everyone to get on my back about I think she's also representing a race. And unfortunately, I don't think it's the best performance. So I think Greta Lee is missing. And I think Teyonah Taylor for sure. If you have not seen 1001, please watch that movie. It got lost in all of the end of year movies. It is one of the best movies of last year.
And it's streaming on Amazon Prime for free.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Agree with Annette Bening. I think she is a wonderful, wonderful actress, but Naiad.
Who has never won an Oscar.
But this is not the movie to do it for.
I know, I'm just saying. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't like the politics of it. I mean, I kind of wish your performances were taken on merit. I mean, I get this whole notion of, you know, if you're a wonderful actor and you haven't been in anything recent, but there's a body of work behind you that people want to recognize. I think there are other awards or other ways to recognize that. But I guess if you haven't got the statue, it feels like your career may be incomplete and, you know, people are sympathetic to that, but she's done better work. And the movie itself, I think, was partially the problem, because the movie itself, while good enough, I've recommended it, I think, as a streaming pick on the podcast because I enjoyed it, just doesn't have that punch, that,
yeah,
that sense of grandeur. That
yeah, it doesn't have the emotional heft that something like that needs. You know, this is about a woman who did incredible, incredible things. And yet, I was like,
well,
okay.
I think it's
all right. So she swam.
It's a terrific.
A lot.
It's a terrific true story on which a really amazing film can be made. But unfortunately, the film is very surface level through the whole time. You really don't get
Never
to know
goes
her.
Deep.
And she goes straight from anyway. We are not here to talk about Naiad, but she her character goes straight from 0 to 10.
Yeah.
Right. So. She doesn't want to swim, and then she's like, "I'm going to swim if it kills me." And then she's like that through the rest of the movie.
And then she won't stop swimming.
Yeah, through the rest of the movie, so you don't see an arc. That's. Yeah. I'm sorry, she's probably just representing the real person, but even then, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. So again, I think Emma Stone's got this one, just because it's the most bombastic performance there.
It's the most. It's the most acting.
Did we talk over you?
You may not talk.
Really?
I hadn't finished my thought.
I thought you. Oh,
you all jumped in to.
It's because you paused for too long.
I mean, clearly,
if you pause.
You snooze, you lose on this podcast.
You lose on this podcast, yeah.
No, so just kind
even
of,
whilst we're like shoveling.
Can you shut up? Let me talk.
Pistachios down our throat.
You're on a pistachio high.
It's true.
So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the heck out of Lily Gladstone's. We're on video here. And like,
oh, yeah, sorry. We got distracted by Sawyer.
I get
the
no
Sawyer
attention.
The dog is down here and she's adorable.
Welcome to my life.
Sorry. Like,
everyone just ignores
I had
what
to
I
take
have
a photo.
She's very cute.
This is my role in movie wallers. They're just not taken seriously by the other critics in the podcast.
Wait, I'm going to defend you on your choice of Lily Gladstone. Yes.
I really enjoyed that performance. It was very impactful on me on the time. But honestly, you know, as I look down this list, the recency bias thing is real. And I just watched Anatomy of a Fall this morning.
Yep.
In terms of... So, look, Emma Stone had a gift of a role in Poor Things. It's the kind of thing that an actor can really get their teeth into, right? It's juicy.
Brave.
It's brave. It does a lot of things. And, gosh, I don't want any of that to detract from the work that she did here, because I think it's somehow... It's somehow easier, and I've got
it's no, over the top.
I've got no idea about what it takes to be an actor. I'm not an actor. I've never done acting.
Yeah.
But it feels to me as if it's easier to have one of these hyped up roles and performance to kind of bring yourself out. What Sandra Hüller had to do in Anatomy of a Fall was play a somewhat unlikable character, a somewhat complicated character. We never quite understand who she is, how she is. But the moments in that movie that she has to cover here, right? She's a parent, she's a wife, she is an author, she is a victim, she is you know, potentially you know, violent. But like the range of things that she had to do in that movie convincingly were so note perfect that it's really impressed me. So you know, I'm really my recency bias would put her at the top of my list. But Emma Stone, that's not to take anything away from what Emma Stone did here in Poor Things, because, boy, it was very impressive. The one actor that I would have included on here that's not here is, and I'm going to butcher her name, but it's the Kaylee Spaney from Priscilla.
Yeah.
That was a very impactful performance for me. It's that movie has, you know, just kind of stuck with me. It's annoying. It's, you know, Rashmi, you say it's like post office gum, right? It's like, it's on my shoe. It won't let me go. It's like following me around. It's part of my 2023 movie story. And Kaylee Spaney, who did a wonderful portrayal of Priscilla Presley in the movie Priscilla, would be the only one I would add.
Okay.
But it's tough. This one is tough.
Yeah. This one is the toughest category. You know, there was a lot of press that, you know, intentionally Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig were left out of nominations for Barbie. You know, I mean, sure, I don't want to take away from Margot Robbie, regardless of how you think about the movie. You know, she is inhabiting the role, the whole arc, etc. But is she better than any of these? Maybe she is better than Annette Bening. Okay, I'll say that. But I think the person who should be truly feeling like they were robbed is Greta Lee in Past Lives.
100%.
I mean, just a masterful performance.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, that's where we're at.
Okay. Yeah. Yassi, why don't you do cinematography and editing?
Okay. So for cinematography, the nominations are the movie El Conde or The Count, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
I have not seen El Conde, unfortunately, so I can't speak to the work that was done there. But I mean, look, everyone else on this list deserves some extraordinary recognition for what they have done for the art of filmmaking here. Killers of the Flower Moon, as always, you know, Scorsese and his directorial as a director and his cinematographer here, they have a movie that transports you to a place and time. It's gorgeously shot, wonderful. Maestro, again, highly stylized with the black and white photography, but again, a very gorgeously shot movie with a wonderful sense of place. The artistic direction is just, you know, proud of that. Hoyt van Hoytema, Oppenheimer. I mean, very famously, Chris Nolan uses IMAX 70mm, all these other formats. But when you look at how the photography tells, augments the story in Oppenheimer, this is not an easy movie to kind of put together here. Christopher Nolan is very visual. Hoyt van Hoytema, his partner in crime for the last couple of movies, since I think he stopped using Wally Pfister as his cinematographer. Just gorgeous work. And Poor Things, again, you know, really clever wide angle shots, very strange angles, very playful, but all absolutely in service of the story. Precious Things, in terms of, you know, how movies are shot, always wind me up. In Poor Things, it just worked. It took us to that very surreal place immediately, and a lot of that was done visually, so props to all of them. I mean, this is a tough one for me. You know, again, I think if I had to gun to my head, I would probably just say Hoyt van Hoytema for Oppenheimer, simply because of all of the invention they had to do for that movie. 70mm black and white IMAX film doesn't exist. They had to go to Kodak. I think it was Kodak. I'm probably going to get fired for that, but let's go to the people who make celluloid to make black and white IMAX film for this movie. I mean, that's not taking the easy route at all. And it was all in service of the story.
Not much more to add to what Joe said. Joe, you're the techie one of us, and I think you add some nice color to that category. I'm surprised that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which I know is a strange thing to say because it's an animation, but that had incredible cinematography. And the other one that I'm shocked is not here is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Yes.
So other than those two, I think that's a fairly good list. I think Oppenheimer's got this one wrapped up, though.
I think Oppenheimer is going to ride the coattails of, you know, many other things. So I had seen all of these movies. I had not seen El Conde. And El Conde is the latest movie from Pablo Larraine. He did No, and he did Jackie, and he did Spencer. So he's this Chilean director, remember, with about Jackie and
yes.
about Lady Diana. So it's streaming on Netflix, and I was like, why did a foreign film in a Spanish language make it in cinematography? That's a very difficult thing to do. So last night I watched this film.
Oh.
And, you know, so he's a Chilean director. The entire movie is shot in black and white. And Pinochet was a dictator in Chile for a long time. And during his time, men, like thousands of young men and some women who were in the arts, who were journalists, who were, you know, political detractors, they just went missing. And then they were found in the desert, you know, just dead. So, you know, he committed genocide on a big scale. And Pablo Larraín imagines Pinochet as literally being a vampire. It's a whole movie about a family of vampires where Pinochet is the lead vampire. He has kids and he has a wife and he takes off in the night as a vampire and he literally sucks the blood out of the people who he's ruling over.
That.
And it is a nod to like Nosferatu and Dracula, and it's gorgeous to look at. It's just like the bright lights as he's flying over the city in black and white. It's very, very deserved. Actually, this was going to be my recommendation if we did some, you know, for this preparation for this.
Oh, you snuck one in there, show. Didn't you?
So I snuck it in, but it's really, so the good thing is the editing nominations are only voted by the editors.
Yeah.
The cinematography is only voted by the cinematographers. Once the nominations are out, everybody votes for everything.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that the cinematographers really had the courage to pick a black and white foreign language film for it. It's very deserving.
Well, thanks for that color, Yasti.
Yes.
And Rashmi, you've completely melted my brain with your comment about Across the Spider-Verse. Can an animation be a best cinematography? I don't know why not.
Right? It should be because you still have to use
about,
the...
When I think about cinematography, I think about lenses and cameras. Celluloid. And I mean, I know a lot of stuff is digital, but... It's fascinating that you can put an animation in a cinematography. No, I'm going to have to think about that one for a while. My brain can't process that. I'm literally like stuck on that. I'm going to be chewing on that for a bit.
I'm glad that I can do that to you after all these years, Joe.
I was going to say completely short. She knows about how to short circuit my brain.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Next category that you asked me to cover. Joe is film editing, and the five films nominated for best editing are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. Thoughts?
Again, I think it is a travesty that Past Lives isn't here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also another one that really... deserves film editing kudos is All of Us Strangers.
Mm-hmm. True.
But I think this is a decent list. I don't know why The Holdovers is here, to be honest. True. I don't think editing elevated this movie in any way or was required to tell the story in a particular cadence or surprise. Whereas I think editing played a big role in All of Us Strangers.
Big role.
Yeah. And Past Lives, right? That flipping back and forth and telling the story from a certain point of view and then flipping that. So I'm kind of irritated that The Holdovers is here. I've got a feeling that this may be a two-person race or a two-film race between Oppenheimer and Poor Things. And I think Oppenheimer is very, very, very worthy because it's such a long film and it flips back and forth and then it has the black and white pieces and it jumps between courtroom and real time and relationships. So I think it is deserving of being here.
You know, this is actually a category I find very hard to judge. You know, I do some editing of our podcast, and so I tend to focus on the very technical aspects of it rather than the storytelling and other elements of editing. And really, really good editing is not just about story sequence, but it's about which shot to use. You know, do you use the wide shot? When do you go in for a close up? You know, when do you show a character saying something versus someone's response to what they're saying? So there's a lot of very important decisions that get made by editing. And so I find it very hard to assess because you tend to give the director the credit for those choices, not necessarily the editor. With that little ramble aside, I mean, I think, again, all of these movies here, you know, The Holdovers is unremarkable in terms of I never once thought, wow, that's really, really well done editing. Not that it's not well done, it's just it didn't speak to me in that way. But the ones that did here are the obvious ones. So Oppenheimer, with its, you know, big film format, the flipping back and forth in time, the way that it very, especially, you know, this is a very talky movie, as I've said many times on the podcast. So whenever you have very dialogue heavy movies, I think the editing becomes very important. Otherwise it could get very stale for us as an audience. And so knowing when to do it. So again, I think Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon as well. I think the sheer length of that movie, this is Thelma Schoonmaker, who I'm not sure if she has Oscars, but she's Scorsese's longtime editor.
Yeah. I believe she does.
She does. Yeah.
So, you know, again, you know, when you look at the challenge of making that movie and telling the story in the way that it was told, very, very high accolade. Poor Things, bonkers mad, visual, again, edited. So again, I'm not unhappy with anything that's here. Anatomy of, again, yeah, gosh. Everything but The Holdovers, what Rashmi said.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I think I cheated and I looked at, so the Academy of Cinema, of Editors, ACE, they give out the awards, they gave the award out to Oppenheimer. So it's, I mean, and truth be told, you know, I don't think this is, you know, his best, Chris Nolan's best film. But I think if there's one thing there's a lot of is constant back and forth, yeah. Dizzying, like whiplash inducing back and forth. And the scenes literally hurtle into each other. Like there's like, you know, there's no like pauses between things. So there's a lot of editing. So if anything needed to win for most editing, then it would be, you know.
It's a very kinetic movie.
Oppenheimer, yeah.
Well, Probably on purpose.
For a talky movie, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah. I think, you know, the one I think of closest is the one with Michelle Yeoh, that one.
Everything Everywhere
Everything
All at Once.
Yes. So it's that level of,
yes, know,
yeah,
excessive.
I mean, some of the early shots in Oppenheimer where they cut back and forth to Oppenheimer's visual kind of mind of, you know, he saw the atoms exploding and all of that kind of. Yeah, yeah, very cool stuff.
Okay, so we'll go to the last two categories. We gave ourselves a timeline, and then if we want to do some more, we can come back to the others. So we will go for Best Direction, mm-hmm. And then we can come back to the writing and others if we have an opportunity. And I'm just looking through the list.
I can tell you.
Go for it, Yazdi.
So the Best Directing. So the Best Directing is interesting because, you know, Oscars keep changing their rules. It's very frustrating, especially in the last 4, 5, 10 years.
Yeah.
They've kept changing the rules. But for better or for worse, where we are at 2024 is that there are 10 films, not 8, not 9, not 7, not 5, but 10 films get nominated for Best Picture, but only 5 get nominated for Best Director. So there is sort of a, you know, implicit assumption that the 5 movies that get Best Director are probably the better of the, you know, 5 out of the better of the 10 movies which got Best Picture. So I don't know if we need to believe that, but that's some people believe.
Have
that.
We had a Best Picture winner that did not get the Best Director then?
Probably, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think we have.
Yeah, we'll have to do some analysis.
So the 5 films which are nominated for Best Director is Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. Again, no small feat considering this is not, you know, an English language movie. Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. And Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest.
My, this is a very esteemed list here of movies. And although I didn't love Killers of the Flower Moon and I had a really hard time with it, I don't bemoan Martin Scorsese for directing. I think All of Us Strangers, I'm going to say again, is missing. Mm-hmm. Past Lives isn't on this list. What is wrong the Academy?
Celine's song needs to be on there.
Correct, correct. I am really happy, though, to see the Zone of Interest here. And I'm really happy that Anatomy of a Fall is on here. I think it's... I think this is a two-person race again between Oppenheimer and Poor Things. I mean, I know Nolan's been getting most of the awards. I think this is a great list. I think any one of these could win and deserve to win.
Yeah, I feel like this is... Nolan's building momentum, not because this is his best movie to date, but because it's kind of his time. Mm-hmm. He has...
And it's an important movie. It's a good... It's an important story to tell.
It is, but, you know, I mean, as the Nolan sycophant, you know, that you always poke fun of me within the movie wallers, it's far from my
his
favorite
best film.
Yeah.
Nolan
I think
movie.
It was higher on mine and Yazdi's list than yours.
No, absolutely. And you know, so for me, it's just the body of work recognition that we talked about earlier seems to be what's carrying this recognition through. I mean, yes, it's a handsome movie, but, you know, had Dune come along,
Dune we'd Part be having 2, a very different discussion.
I would have Villeneuve much higher on the list in terms of the big blockbuster movies. Yeah. But yeah, I don't begrudge anyone on this list. I mean, you know, they are all very accomplished filmmakers. Jonathan Glazer, I think, you know, put together a very powerful movie with Zone of Interest, a very low key powerful movie. But yeah, all of them are fantastic.
Yazdi.
Yeah, this is a very, very accomplished list. There is not a weak link here. I think we overestimate Scorsese at our own peril. I think. You know, I dread to think when you know, he won't be making movies anymore because, you know, he's a master. You know, and as much as it hurts me, you know, Christopher Nolan has made much better early films, but they were considered too small and too kind of, you know, out of the mainstream. And then he made, you know, his Batman films and his Inceptions and his Interstellars, and those were considered too mainstream. So I think this is the film which, you know, has the right amount of, you know, recognition, historical importance, you know, all of that. And, you know, grudgingly, yes, his time has come. So I think I'd be shocked if he didn't win this. Who should win? I think Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. That's a very difficult film in terms of its structure, in terms of how it was done. And, you know, The Zone of Interest is a great film, but I think it's kind of a one-note pony. I please don't come after me, people, but I would have switched out Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest with Celine Song for Past Lives.
Easily.
She came out of nowhere. This is her directorial venture, and she's made a thing of just amazement. So that's who I would pick. But I think, you know, I would be very, very, very surprised if Nolan didn't pick this up.
Yeah. Okay, final category.
Just to add, I was trying to look up quickly who directed Across the Spider-Verse because, Rashmi, you pulled it up for cinematography.
Yeah.
But for me, achievement in directing has to be recognized for something as technically accomplished as Across the Spider-Verse. Yeah. That movie still has me absolutely mind blown in terms of what they were able to achieve visually and in terms of storytelling. It's close to a perfect movie for me, and I don't say that lightly. So I would have been happy to see them there, even though they didn't make it.
Okay. So Best Picture. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Yazdi. Good list?
I think it's a good list. I think it's a good list of the very small and the very big. So Zone of Interest, I don't think anybody's watched. It's a pretty small movie. Maestro only ever released on Netflix. And then on the other hand, we have Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer, which are pretty big. Holdovers made a ton of money. Barbie made the most money of all. And then American Fiction and Anatomy of a Fall are, again, relatively small films, which, you know, I don't know if people have seen. So you know, kudos to the Directors Guild of the Academy to pick this list. Would I have switched some out? Yes, for sure. For me personally, the one which towers over everything else, and it was my number one movie of the year, is Past Lives. That movie just sits in my heart. It won't leave, even though I try to kick it out. I also adore Poor Things for what it achieved. So those two are my favorite, but it's Oppenheimer's time. It's won every single award leading up to year. So again, I think this particular telecast is not going to have many surprises, and Oppenheimer is going to pick up this prize.
Joe?
Yeah, overall, it feels like a very safe list here by the Academy. I'm actually surprised to see American Fiction on this list, if I'm honest.
Me too.
I like the movie a lot, but I mean, it wasn't there among my favorite movies of the year. So yeah, that's the only one that I'm kind of... I didn't connect with Maestro, but boy, did I admire it.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised to see it here either, but American Fiction is just the odd one out. But yeah, would love to have seen Across the Spider-Verse here. For me, it really, again, I'm suffering from a little bit of recency bias. As I said earlier, Anatomy of a Fall is on my mind. I finished watching it earlier today. So it competes very much with Poor Things for my choice. And I think I would probably have to give it to Poor Things just because of how bonkers it is. But I'm actually struggling with that decision as it comes out of my mouth. So, as you said, Oppenheimer is going to walk away with it. So the discussion's kind of moot. But yeah, you know, I feel like it's just a very safe list. And I wish there were, you know, some of the other movies that we've try to champion this year again.
Yeah.
All of Us Strangers.
Yeah.
Would have been wonderful.
Sad ones who have been overlooked.
Yeah, not much to add. I agree with exactly with what both of you have said. I mean, the thing here is, you know, people have made a big deal of Barbie. Mm-hmm. What is Barbie doing here? I don't think it's the best. It's not the best movie of the year.
It.
Yeah, exactly. It's very easy to pass over. Again, like Yazdi, I would love if Past Lives got this. Wouldn't it be great if they split up director and best movie, and Celine Strong got the Oscar
song
for this? Yeah. Celine Song. What did I say? Celine
Strong.
Strong. Sorry, because I think she's strong. Yeah, and I think not enough people saw 1001. It's a really great narrative on life and the system. If anyone had watched it. And then another really good movie I'll mention again, it was in our top 10, Fallen Leaves, which didn't make an appearance in any of these movies. Such a good movie about, has a lot to say about a lot of things.
Especially best foreign film.
Yeah, best foreign film, exactly. But yeah, I kind of wish that Spider-Man had been in this list.
Yeah.
I think I would easily replace Barbie with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. As I look down my list of movies for 2023, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is still...
Yeah, it was a good movie. It was a really, really good movie.
And, you know, again, I understand culturally what a big juggernaut Barbie has been, so don't come after me. But, you know, a lot of people have made the argument, it made $1 billion and, you know... Why didn't it get nominated for Best Director, etc.? But my point is, in 2020, Bad Boys for Life made the most money. Should it have been,
great argument, yeah.
Should it have been, like, nominated for Best Film? So I think people are confusing conflating most money made with the most recognition, and that doesn't always go hand in hand.
Yeah, agree. I think Oppenheimer's got it wrapped up, although... I think Poor Things could come from behind, right? Because, and I didn't, as you all know, I didn't love Poor Things. But it's an unusual movie. And it could get a last minute bump this week as people are making their final selections.
Yeah, stranger things have happened.
Yeah. We'll see.
The only other Hail Mary I had was that, we've already talked about it, was for All of Us Strangers. But
yeah.
It was not to be.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
But I'm glad at least somehow Past Lives made it.
Yeah, that would be Poor Things and Past Lives mixed to Past Things. any final comments on any of the nominations? We're kind of at time.
I just want to shout out Anatomy of a Fall again. Just watched it, but I can't get past the level of difficulty in the writing. I mean, the character nuances, the The idea behind it, the very smart choices about what to include and what to leave out. This movie's gonna stick with me for a very, very, very long time. So just want to shout that out as one of my favorite overall nominations here, because I think in terms of advancing the art for anything, this one is up there. It's beautifully written.
I mean, for a French-Swiss foreign film, which its own country did not pick for submission for Best Foreign Film, this little movie has done so well. It got a nomination for Best Director. It got one of the slots for Best Director, which is, you know, very hard. It got Best Film. It got Best Actress. And it very deservedly got Best Original Screenplay, again, for a foreign film.
Yeah.
And really, I think of all of the great accomplishments of Anatomy of a Fall, its writing is probably the most, you know, the highest. Mm-hmm. So,
and maybe, you know, it may win in that category. Yeah. Again, you know, we haven't gone through writing, but it may get best original screenplay.
Yeah.
Although that whole list is very good.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Although May now we're on writing. Yeah, well, let's just quickly cover it. So writing original screenplays, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, and Past Lives. So again, I argue that May, December is original. I think it's based on an idea, mm-hmm. which was, you know, the teacher and the student. So I'm kind of surprised that that's in original screenplay. And then just adapted, we had American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. So again, interesting, you know, that there was a lot made about Barbie being original, but it's adapted. It's not an original idea, so.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that wraps up the, unless you guys have anything else to add.
I have one other thing to mention. For those of you who are in San Diego, the Digital Gym locally is showing the nominated best foreign films, Io Capitano, Teacher's Lounge, and the third one is...
The Snow One?
Yeah, the...
Society of the Snow.
Society of the Snow is streaming on Netflix. So if you want to catch up on those movies, just run over to your local micro theater, the Digital Gym. Just a little shout out for them. Yes.
I've shut my computer down.
Okay. Let's all do the same thing. Thank you once again for listening, watching, however you are consuming Movie World, as we appreciate you. Let us know what you thought of these movies too. We probably won't do an Oscars live stream this year. So, you know, this is how you're going to hear what we're talking about. But that said, it felt very safe to me overall.
And deserving. I mean, deserving, I think most of the ones are deserving. I think there are a few that we would change out, but...
I really hope there are some upsets, because for me, many of these categories seem locked in.
Yeah.
I think the only two I don't know, hand on heart, is Best Leading Actress and Best Leading Actor. But outside of that, it would be good if there were some upsets.
Yeah.
It always kind of shakes things up and makes for like...
As long as they don't read the wrong envelope for the right category.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll wrap up the podcast for today. We'll be back again with more stuff soon. Momentum seems to be picking up this year. This year, 2023, 2024 feels like energized kind of back into the pre-COVID momentum of movies. It was strange for a couple of years. I think writer strikes and other things have messed things up, but keep listening, keep watching.
Send us your feedback.
Until our next podcast. Too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.